Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the TNT News Hour on BBSRadio.com. This is your host for the next hour, Don Nikoloff. I am your host every Wednesday at this time, as well as the host of another show on BBSRadio.com, Evident Footprints, which airs 10 p.m. Pacific Time, 1 a.m. Eastern Time, and it's always a day earlier on the East Coast. You folks are 3 hours younger than us, so we have a bit more wisdom. I have a special guest this afternoon, and before I introduce him, I just want to cover a couple of points here. Number one, this is not mainstream news media, so you're going to hear some things that are new to you. Hopefully, we're going to educate you and bring some light on some topics that are not at all discussed in mainstream, as we do on this show, whether I am the host or my buddy Donald Newsom, the founder of BBS Radio, who also does the TNT News Hour. What does TNT stand for? Well, a lot of people think it's dynamite. It is dynamite, and at the same time, it is the trusted news trader. And that's a term that Don thought up, I guess. It's based upon the truth. You should be able to trust the truth. And we're trading it. We're giving it to you with the expectation that you will take it and run with it, make something of it. And you're welcome to call into the show. Those of you who are online see the numbers for Station 1 and Station 2. Actually, we can take calls on any of those lines, so just look for the numbers there. I'm not going to take the time to read them off to you. Now, I have a special guest who is a good friend. He's been on my Evident Footprints show as a guest, back on the old network, as I like to call it. And he will soon be coming up on a future program on Evident Footprints. He is well known in the Patriot community. He has had his own show on Republic Broadcasting Network. The show was called Seize Liberty Radio Show, as well as he was also a regular host of the Elaine and Ed Brown, or the Ed Brown and Elaine Brown saga. And in that saga, there was quite a bit of evidence that came out regarding tax protesting and the subsequent abduction of the Brown. Now, with that, I would like to bring my guest on and let him know. I'm hearing a little bit of wind. I don't know what's causing that, but maybe he can adjust his mic a bit. Our guest for the next hour is going to be none other than Mr. Tim Wingate. Tim, how are you?
I'm fine, Don. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah.
Are you hearing any wind?
No.
Okay.
I guess you're alive and breathing, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I did have the microphone down beneath my nose, and You know how that is with the microphones when you breathe.
Yeah.
Even though I have a windscreen on it, it still picks it up, so we'll try not to have that happen anymore.
Okay. All right. Tim, I appreciate you coming on such short notice. You were broadcasting on Republic, and I have to stress the word were, and this isn't going to be about network bashing or anything like that, but I found it particularly interesting that your scheduled guest for your next show was none other than Russell Means from the Lakota tribe, and or what is now known as the Republic of Lakota.
Right, the Republic of Lakota, because they have served official notice to the United States government that because of the breaking of all the treaties, they are declaring their independence as a sovereign nation.
Yes,
and they have decided on what territory they are going to contribute or have. They're inviting those who want to be supporters and those to move to come to set things up. Right now, they're in the process of setting up a provisional government. And last week, he was Russell Means was in Washington, D.C., trying to he was visiting various embassies and trying to obtain official recognition from other countries throughout the world. And, of course, I find it rather ironic that the United States has recognized the breakaway part Kosovo and has recognized that in spite of Serbia and Russia and other countries' protests. They have recognized Kosovo, but they won't recognize the Republic of Lakota.
Yeah, that I found that particularly interesting too, and my intuition told me that there was something more behind the cancellation of your show than that. Now,
to be honest, Don, I was told specifically that it was that the numbers were going down, which means that based on however they gather their demographics or their information as far as listenership goes. As well as that people had specifically called and complained about the content and the guests and the quality of the program.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Considering that
fair. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm not holding. I had a nice talk with John Stadtmiller.
Mm-hmm.
I have no animosity toward Republic Broadcasting whatsoever. They're there to make some money and to do some good things and give a voice to people as they can, but they have to make some money doing this. They have to have and we did not have any problem with any of the sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
None of the sponsors complained or were going to withdraw advertising or anything like that. It was just primarily listenership, as we were told, and numbers. So I have no problem with whatsoever. In fact, I encourage people to listen to Republic Broadcasting because they do have some unique programming, I think, that will awaken people as to what's going on. It's just that my concern and my belief is that the demographics for that time slot on Saturday shows that the people we are trying to reach obviously are not listening at that time on that station.
Well, that someone, and this is just logic, what happened to the off switch? Or what happened to the channel switch? Now, I'm not saying that,
they used it because some people weren't listening. They didn't, whoever listened, the folks that would listen on Saturday afternoon to Republic Broadcasting Network were not interested in hearing a message about freedom and liberty that crossed, obviously, racial and ethnic lines, because that's what we were dealing with.
Yes.
And my specific belief is that unless we all stand together, or as Benjamin Franklin said, if we don't all hang together, we were certainly going to hang separately.
Yes. Well, I commend you for your willingness to approach and broach that boundary that's been constructed there along those lines. Obviously, and I'm not going to say who ultimately was behind this decision, although one could easily blame the head of the organization. That's not what we're trying to do here, of course.
Yeah.
To me, the crux of running a network is the support of sponsorship. If you have sponsors who are willing to support the cause and the message, and they had not complained, then there is there's sort of a dichotomy there that doesn't really make complete sense.
Well, sure there is, Don. Don, it's because certain stations appeal to certain groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
Certain broadcast networks appeal to certain groups of people. Obviously, we're not appealing to the demographic group that comprises the listeners of RBN, and that's not RBN's fault.
Yeah.
This has to deal with
the mindset.
The message we have is not appealing to that particular market share. And if that's the case, then that's the case, and I don't fault John Stadtmiller wanting to find somebody that, or some program that is going to appeal to their market share,
mm-hmm.
so that they can increase any advertising revenues that may come through. It's a complete business decision on his part, and I have none whatsoever. I think the worst thing that can be said is that somebody wrote me an email and says, was I inferring that many of the people who listen to RBN are racist? And I replied back, no, I'm not inferring that, but I am confronting a reality that for the last 20, 25 years within the Patriot movement, a strong contingency of the outspoken patriotic community, shall we say, has been white supremacist or white separatist or something, a variation along those lines.
Okay, now you...
But I'm not accusing anybody or any particular group.
Okay.
Anything.
Yes, now you can see I'm invoking a response, which okay. is going to lead us along the path of our discussion. And I think Russell Means' cause is worthwhile. I see many, transcendental or parallels to this whole topic, and that's the topic of racism and the subtle ways in which it's put out there for us. We either take it in or we reject it. It's action, reaction, problem, reaction, solution in play.
Sure.
I'm not at all blaming Russell Means. Obviously, this is about freedom. They're talking about their sovereignty. The Lakota Indians are talking about all these ancient agreements that they struck up with the government years gone by that really have been just continuously disregarded and broken. Whatever the reason is, whether the reason is demographics, I mean, are we talking about shotgun racks in the back of a pickup truck listenership, or are we talking about people who are looking purely at the Constitution, or are they looking at the law? What is your perception on that? I don't know if I made myself clear in that.
No, I'm a little confused, Don. I'm sorry.
Well, okay. The reaction of people, definitely there's a reaction, and is it because these people think they don't have any right to make these declarations?
I really don't know. I can't speak for these other people, but I do know this, my involvement with the Patriot movement, especially those who are out west who didn't have, historically and within their states, did not have a stake in either side of the war between the states. The western states that they grew up in came into statehood after the war between the states, and they looked more or less at the Native American issue and problems and reservations and everything along those lines from a different perspective than the rest of us did. And there are a number of very large patriot, religious organizations, shall we say, that completely take a dim view towards the Native Americans' viewpoint. And they basically, what they do is that they agree with the historical manifest destiny philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And although they wouldn't encourage that kind of thing happening now today, they certainly want to hold it up with in any form of policy decisions that go forward from that. And I find that incongruent with the concept of talking about liberty and freedom if it's only for our group and not for your group. I don't see that is the way. And so you have a certain built-in animosity to some degree, which has been actually nurtured and grown by the federal government over the last 200-plus years against Native American populations and Native American culture.
Mm-hmm.
And you will find that there's multiple justifications for doing the things that have been done against the Native American population. Now, if we were today to say we should go to the reservations, what they did to the Native Americans, if we were to do that to, say, Hispanic or Black Americans today, Chinese Americans, anybody but the whites, If we were to do to them what was done to the Native Americans, you would have lawsuits, ACLU lawsuits all over the place, such as taking the children from their parents, forcibly putting them into government schools, changing their names to standard white English type names, Forbidding them to speak in their native tongues, and trying to erase all cultural history and relationship
tradition
from their minds.
Yeah, their customs and their culture and their tradition.
Right. And you have to give it to the Native Americans who have been able to maintain and actually encourage a resurgence in their history and in their cultural identity. And it's taken these folks, especially amongst the Lakota Nation, I forget how many years, he says it's been close to 20, maybe even 30 years for them to put together all the legalities. And the information is available for free to anybody who wants to go to their website, which I think all you have to do is Google Republic of Lakota.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lakota is spelled with a K. And if you went to the Republic of Lakota, you will find that you can actually download, I think there is a PDF document, you can download their information on what their argument is, why they're doing what they're doing, and their justification for it. I took time and sat and read through the whole thing. I could not find anything wrong with it whatsoever. I see their argument as justifiable, if not more justifiable, than the Irish argument against the British, The Indian argument against the British, our argument against the British.
Yes.
In those different times when those peoples were looking for self-identity and for freedom from an oppressive regime or oppressive government. So I find that here you have an indigenous people upon a continent on which they have never left or been deported from, who are standing up and saying, hey, you know what, hold on a minute. In fact, in many ways, their argument, as presented, has more validity to it than even the Founding Fathers' arguments did against the British.
Well, they were here first, number one.
Right.
Now,
so,
if I could interject something, and this keeps running through my mind while you're speaking, and your words are resonating through me, and I'm sure through any of the listeners that are somewhat familiar with this whole issue. This mindset has been controlled not just through the history books, which have been craftily written to portray the red man, the indigenous people of North America.
I wouldn't even go so far as saying red man. I try to deal very respectfully with these people because I don't want to be offensive. I have cousins,
That's not what I mean.
F Choctaw.
Yes.
No, I didn't think you did, Don.
Yeah.
But I'm just, even in casual conversation, terms like that can be offensive, and I know that you don't mean it offensively, and
I'm
neither do I. So
yes.
Just for using in common colloquial terminology.
Yes, I should have paraphrased that by putting quotation marks around it, which would have made it more clear. But I will even refrain from using that because I agree with you. The Hollywood movie industry has always portrayed the indigenous peoples as those that would attack the white man. Okay, was circle the wagons and defend ourselves.
Right.
And
that's what we're all brought up with, John Wayne, Wagon Train, all the other programs.
And two, I don't think Clint Eastwood actually engaged in that type of filmography. However, maybe one movie, and I can't even remember the name of it, but that's not the point. The point is that the conditioning to accept this as historical fact and as the good guys against the bad guys, you know, that mindset, the division of the people. Now, when you bring that into a more recent historical context, say, as of the mid to late 1980s, all of a sudden you started seeing these Indian reservation casinos cropping up, and who controls the casinos, and how much of that money actually goes into the hands of the indigenous peoples, regardless of where these casinos are scattered throughout the country?
Well, I can answer some of that based on what Russell Means, who was asked the same question, has said, is that actually only in a very, very small percentage of all the casinos does any money actually go to or into the coffers of the tribal council for everybody on the reservation. Most of the time, these are privately owned by Native Americans who are doing very well amongst themselves, but they're not necessarily tribal. Tribes may get a percentage, but it's the state that gets a higher percentage of the revenues.
Yes, that's the point I wanted to make. That was flashing through my mind as I was listening to you speak as well. And isn't it always about the money? It always comes down to it's more.
Yeah, it always is.
It's more about money and less about the welfare of the people, and race is not even the issue. These reservations. If you've seen any of these reservations, I can tell you through my world travels, I've been all over the United States, and some of the most depressed communities financially and sociologically are the Indian reservations, or what we call the Indian reservations. And it's heartbreaking to see that people are left to suffer, and that they're not given any of the accoutrements that we have. Maybe they choose not to have those, because I think those people could pick up and leave, but that's also what they want.
No. Seriously, Don, this has been a form of cultural genocide.
Yes, I agree.
It's been a form of financial genocide. The horrendous and terrible stories of individuals, and I have to give it to them, the terrible things they have overcome. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying anybody is perfect. People make their decisions to be good or to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's individuals' choices, regardless of what race you are, regardless of the motivating factors in your life. Each individual makes their own choice, but there are sometimes extenuating circumstances that brings a person to a decision of how they're going to live their life. Also, there is a certain amount, and I want you to understand, you know, we kind of started talking off with this thing about raising the issue of racism. There is a good kind of racism, and there's a bad kind of racism. Racism does not necessarily only mean something negative. There's a positive kind, and that is wanting to look out for your own group of people, wanting to look out for your own genetic heritage, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing wrong with that. In fact, I don't know, some people may take offense, but I look at it this way. Dogs are dogs. Canines are canines. They're just different breeds of the same group.
Sure.
And if you can intermarry, if you can reproduce amongst your own kind, you are the same kind. Now, if you are a person who does not, you know, for generation, as far as you know, all the way back to that you can trace to a particular place, and you've only your ancestors have only reproduced with those of your own kind, and that's what you want to do, good for you. That's your choice.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean you're any different or any better than others who have chosen to either intermingle or they have a separate group that they can trace back as far as they can trace as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you start looking at it as a, as you take a look at the, what is that, that dog show, that Westminster thing? I remember this year everyone had a big deal because a beagle actually won the dog show, the big Westminster English dog show that a beagle won. And they were like, oh, you know, how dare they? They're just not that good of a breed. Well, they're a dog. And if the dog met the qualifications for being excellent, what difference does it make? See, all I'm trying to say is that inside, we're all the same. But if we choose to make a decision about I want to do things that benefit in my case, it'd be Celtic. I'm Scot-Irish. Mm-hmm. And if I want to do things and hang around with other Scot-Irish people, and I prefer my daughters or my sons marry Scot-Irish people, well, that's my choice. That's my preference. Ultimately, it's my children's choice as to what they decide to do.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I would have to accuse you of having that shotgun on the gun rack in the back of the...
No, not at all. As I mentioned before, I have first cousins who are half Choctaw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You have to understand, I am all in favor of encouraging celebration of cultural history.
Yeah, the propagation of the species. Yes.
I go to the Scottish fests. I'm perfectly proud to wear my clan's tartan. I have no problem whatsoever celebrating my heritage, my cultural heritage.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that because I want to celebrate my cultural heritage, that I want to do it to the reduction or to reduce anybody else's, the importance of somebody else's cultural heritage.
Absolutely. Well, that leads us to a point here, and I don't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine.
Because you can come back to it, too. You know, we have this argument, and it's a huge argument, and it has everything to do with their intent to keep us bickering about this while they move forward with their New World Order plans. You have people of the Hebrew faith who are not Zionists yet. Using the word Jew, everyone is thrown into the same category, and as if Jews are better than Native American Indians, or if Jews are better than blacks, or if blacks are better than Indians. It's a senseless argument. Absolutely no reason for it whatsoever, other than those that are orchestrating this dissent and are fomenting the disagreements amongst all these different peoples know quite well what they're doing, and they're doing it intentionally.
Of course. And our sacred book is better and more accurate than your sacred book.
Mm-hmm.
And our sacred book tells us that your bunch of people are a bunch of crooks and thieves and shiftless and lazy, and you're a little bit less human than we are, so therefore we have a right to persecute you and keep you in your place.
Yes. Yes, and these terms that they come up with, such as useless eaters, or you know,
useless eaters and breeders.
Yes, exactly. But they, while they promote useless eating and useless breeding, while they gather their fortunes.
Well, you bring up a good point, Don, and that is as long as we in the freedom loving and the liberty movement are willing to argue with each other and bicker and be divided over skin color, cultural heritage, and whose sacred books are more important than other sacred books, the large, huge, fascist, freedom-stealing federal bureaucracy that is moving forward will continue to gain ground because we can't unite enough to stand up against them unitedly.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that has to do with our perception or our discernment of what is really going on. Now, if I could use an example. In the schools, And I'm finding this out. The more teachers I talk to and the more students I talk to, because students eventually graduate from school, and when they get into the real world and they see what they've been just indoctrinated in, and this is there's a push to get, and this is not intended to sound racist whatsoever, but these are specific programs being implemented in the schools. They're teaching the getting along with other races while they're subtly promoting, and this is a form of mind control or brainwashing in this, that white girls should acclimate themselves to black boys. Now, I'm not saying that is a bad thing for that to happen via the sovereign choice of the girl. She finds a black boy attractive, or a black girl finds a white boy attractive, that they fall in love and get married and have a family and have kids. That's fine. But they perfectly know well that they're creating a welfare state, making the white girl, and this is not always the case, keep in mind, but you see the pattern of more unwed mothers with children which were procreated with the assistance of a black male, or vice versa. It could be a black girl.
You have many biracial, triracial children out there who are suffering in poverty.
Yes.
Right.
There's an attempt underlying all this to subvert this sovereign desire to maintain a racial identity. It's as if they're trying to erase racial identities. Now,
well, and I think some of the people I know within the Native American tribes feel their families feel the same way, that many of them are of mixed heritage, and they bemoan that fact. They would prefer that their people maintain their self-identity by only reproducing with their own. And I understand that. I just recognize it as this is a tough one, Don. This is really a tough one, because just like with breeds of dogs, some dogs do some things better than others. Some dogs were actually, in fact, bred, and the breed was more or less created to do special tasks. Mm-hmm. You have sheepdogs that have an ability, especially like amongst the border collies, very intelligent, very smart, seem to have a genetic instinct on how to herd sheep, whereas you have others that are hounds. They are able to, like the bloodhound, they're trackers. Mm-hmm. You have others that are more for fighting, and they can stand up toe to toe with another dog or another animal.
Michael Vick is the expert on that.
Well, yeah. See, the whole point is that they're all dogs, but they have different functions and they do certain things well. If you overmix a group together, do you come up with something that's equally as good in all these things, or are you actually watering down all these things? Well, you know, dogs are different than human beings because they don't have self-determination. We as human beings do have self-determination. And I'm not going to step on anybody's toes and tell them what they should or they shouldn't do. Yeah. I just simply suggest to them that they consider the consequences of their actions, and is this something that they want to live with for the rest of their lives, or at least a portion. Like one of my daughters, beautiful, beautiful blue eyes. I told her, I says, now, your blue eyes, which some people believe is a genetic mutation that arose maybe, you know, 10,000 years ago around the Caspian Sea, according to some article I just read. Okay, whatever, wherever it came from, genetically, her family has preserved those beautiful blue eyes for her to have. Does she want to pass those on to anyone else? If that's the case, she needs to be with somebody with blue eyes. If not, then she runs a 50-50 chance of that not happening. Uh-huh. That's for the individual. We're talking about complete and total cognization of individual responsibility for actions. And this is the nature of free people, liberty people, that we can make a choice as to what we want to do and not do. And this is what is being removed from us by this growth of this federal fascist bureaucracy that's starting to take over this country. And at some point, they will do just like other large government organizations populated by people who think they know better what you need than what you do, and you will have a new eugenics type of program imposed upon a population, a group of people that are deemed, as you said, useless breeders and feeders.
Well, what comes to mind there is the insane agenda of the Aryan movement prior to World War II, and really is still alive. It has never died. It's been going on ever since. It's just gone underground, and it's rearing its ugly head over the past, over the past 6 years. It never really stopped. It just went underground. And it's more recently, and probably with the rise of the Bush family into the presidency, it's taken on a new life. And, of course, they're doing the same things. And the dichotomy of this whole argument that they present is that there's nothing pure about their Aryan race or their Aryan nation, and that that's been the most dishonest aspect of it. Is that there's
nothing? Oh yeah, it's very true. In fact, I was just watching something the other night about Hitler, in that he did not want to reproduce and have children for fear that his children would turn out would turn out looking like him, who he felt was not the ideal of the perfect Aryan Nordic man, because he was not tall and he did not have blonde hair. So
his mother was Jewish too.
I don't know. I have heard different stories and contradictory information on that, and I've read quite a bit on it, and I'm still up in the air as to, and even if she was Jewish, we don't know if that is a racial Jew of the tribe or a descendant of the tribe of Judah, or if that is a cultural or religious Jew of some other family group that adopted a form of Judaic religion.
Yeah, well, the word Jew does not mean Judeo-Christian, for example.
What does the word Jew mean to you?
Well, that's the word that was coined by the Zionists, who are really the Khazars, or the Khazarian people that masqueraded as if they were Judeans, tracing the history back from
well, I don't know that they coined the word, Don. I think what they did was that they took the word and broad brush applied it to a group. What they did is they removed the specification of what the word referred to nebulized it, nebulous.
Well, it became obfuscated under that term.
Yeah, there you go, obfuscated. Yeah exactly.
It hidden, okay? Hidden with,
right,
with,
and
with
I don't have any other problem with the Khazari, the history of the Khazars, Eastern European, as we would call it, Eastern European Jewry. It's there. It's in the history books. Arthur Kessler wrote in the 13th Tribe, talked about it, and he was, quote-unquote, Jewish, admitted the difference. We know that even the State of Israel, which is a socialist, secular state that tolerates religious expression, they were forced into a position of having to accept some of the Falasha folks from Ethiopia, who could literally trace their heritage back to Israel or Israelites to Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you have, of course, Sephardic Jews who can trace their heritage back because they never lost track of their ancestry, mm-hmm. and they can trace it back to first century Israel, if not even prior to that. And so you get into this specific thing, what's a Jew?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it has nothing. People say to me when I've complained about the state of Israel and their behavior, they go, "Oh, you're anti-Semitic," and I go, "No, I like the Arabs."
Yeah,
because the Arabs are just as Semitic as in fact, even more cases, in some cases, even more Semitic than those who are claiming to be they're Israelis by nationality, but they're not Israelites by racial heritage.
Yes, yes, exactly. And you know, we have this argument, not that I want to go into religion, but you talk about who the Israelites are, and the Judeo-Christians are not the same as those calling themselves blanket, general in a general sense, obfuscating their true identity, Jews.
Yeah.
And that lends more credibility to the argument that the Lakota Indians have, or any race that prefers to maintain its anonymity, you know, its sovereignty.
Sure.
This is a spiritual issue to these people. It's a spiritual issue with me. And let me tell you this. I'm 50% Macedonian. I'm one quarter Slovak, okay? And now, politically, that would have been Czechoslovakia, but now Slovakia is its own country, so to speak. So there's 75%. Now, what's the rest of the makeup? The rest of the
25%.
Makeup is 12.5% German and 12.5% Dutch. Now, I know this from tracing.
Well, at least you have that, because you know, Don, if you're not Dutch, you're not much. being that I'm part Dutch too.
Now, how should I equate that as it causes me to be ineligible to be in the Westminster dog show because I don't have the purity of a dog, whereas many of those breeds are a result of crossbreeding of the species, like you correctly said.
Sure.
Now,
yeah.
if I have a cat that I can make look like a dog by what I feed it and how I treat it and how I groom it and whatever other means I can come about, and it's discovered that it's a cat, and my cat has won the dog show. Does that disqualify me? Does that make that event a non-event because
of
the
means? Well, it wouldn't be a dog show anymore, then, would it?
Well, but now I could argue it's an animal show, you see.
Well, you could if that's what they wanted to do. I think the whole argument and this whole thing comes down to self-determination.
Yes.
Do people have a right to have self-determination? As long as it does not harm anybody else, does not hurt anybody else in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, then we get into a fight between those that have some faith, and even atheism is a faith. It's a
sure.
belief, a belief that there is no supreme being or there is no creator. And I acknowledge people's right to believe that, but I don't have to subscribe to that myself, and neither does anyone else. So we have all of these different elements that are dictating what's going on, and while we're arguing about the color of our skin or where we worship or whether or not we worship at all and come to all these conclusions about who is better than the other, while they're busy making money at all of this and so-called empowering themselves, we are struggling with these principles which were designed to cause us to disagree, to design. They were designed to cause us to hate, and through our ignorance, we buy it hook, line, and sinker. It's designed to foment wars, or at least to, on the surface, be a pretext for creating war. Where again, we know that that's just the method they use to make more money, and to gain more power. So we come to the point where we have to come to a deeper sense of understanding and wisdom or consciousness about where all this is going, and that leads us inevitably to spirit, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, one of the things I really, really believe in, and I have a book by this gentleman by the name of Wes Nisker called Crazy Wisdom, and I believe it's out of print. There's a newer version that is available now as well. But it's something that I've held on to and kept with me for some time. And that is, he says that I believe in crazy wisdom. Crazy wisdom. There are certain amongst us in all different peoples, all different humans, there's a certain personality type that seems to arise that maybe they're the philosophers, maybe they're the prophets, maybe they're the visionaries amongst us, maybe they are the ones that are truly spiritual. But the idea of crazy wisdom, and I'll just I'll read this because he says it so much better than I could. A special kind of wisdom is loose in the world. This wisdom is difficult to codify or categorize, and it refuses to be institutionalized. It's called crazy wisdom, and so it is, both crazy and wisdom. Crazy wisdom is the wisdom of the saint, the Zen master, the poet, the mad scientist, and the fool. Crazy wisdom sees that we live in a world of many illusions, that the emperor has no clothes, and that much of human belief and behavior is ritualized nonsense. Crazy wisdom understands antimatter and old Sufi poetry, loves paradox and puns and pie fights and laughing at politicians. Crazy wisdom flips the world upside down and backward till everything becomes perfectly clear. You will find crazy wisdom flowing through all of human history, bubbling up here and there, now and then, pointing out different ways of looking at things, reminding people to take it easy, and providing a necessary counterpoint to self-righteousness. From the Taoists to the Dadaists to the Book of Ecclesiastes to Mark Twain's Letters to the Earth, in the parables of Chuang Tzu and Baal Shem Tov, out of the cyclonic whirl of Rumi's dervish poetry and the profound nonsense of Samuel Beckett's confused characters, lurking beneath the unruly hair of Albert Einstein and between the busy eyebrows of Groucho Marx, inside the howly voice of Allen Ginsberg, and from behind the rags of Lily Tomlin's bag lady. Whatever tone it speaks in and whatever disguise it wears, crazy wisdom arises again and again to expose us to ourselves and to remind us of the strange, impossible nature of our enterprise here on Earth, life.
Now, that's I was actually following along because you were kind enough to send me a copy of this in an email earlier today, and I was looking for myself in there. Somewhere he didn't mention musician or talk show host or journalist, so I guess I'm the fool.
Well, I don't think it meant to be. It was an exclusionary inclusion here.
I understand
what you wrote here, but the concept is that, and if you notice, I added underneath that freedom and liberty is a crazy notion. It's a crazy concept. It's very fragile, and it's only been very short. And it's only bubbled up occasionally throughout the timeline of our history, of our recorded history of human existence. And so why cling to forms and methods and structures and institutions that suppress and restrict and categorize and try to constrain freedom and liberty? Let's not. Let's just shed those things aside and seize liberty and reach out and grab and live our lives, because it becomes it's honesty. And that, to me, Don, is what spirituality is all about. It's about living the world in the world as it is. And if you believe in a particular faith path, the good for you. Go for it. If you believe that a faith path doesn't exist for you and you're just going to live your life, good for you. That's fine.
That should
just don't impose
right.
on me.
Yes, and that should be your right. That should be your sovereign right. And as long as you don't tread on others, then go about it. Now, last night, if I could share this briefly with you, a friend and I were talking about the outcome of the New World Order. Let's say we went through whatever we had to go through, and then you end up with this New World Order. Eventually, and I hypothesized, let's say that it was so successful that one person ended up with all the wealth of the world, and everyone else was off the face of the planet, exterminated, gone, evaporated, history, a long-forgotten memory. And this one individual had all the wealth. What would that wealth be worth? And it didn't take this person 1 second to respond, nothing. And so we're all here. Why are we giving that one person, or 10 people, or 100, or maybe 10,000, the same power? Why do we do that?
I'll tell you why. I kind of believe this way, that most people are sheeple, in varying degrees of sheepleness. And if you're not a sheeple, then you're a canine. And of the canines, you're one of two kinds. You're either a predator or a protector. I tend to be more of a sheepdog. I try to be more of a protector. But there are others out there who are wolves in sheep's clothing, who are looking for prey. And I know it's simplistic, but I think you can see that that generally seems to be the way it is in the world. You have many people who will stand up and will fight for something until it becomes too costly, and then they'll run back into the protection of the herd. There's others who will stand up no matter what.
Well, I have the sense you are the latter.
I hope so.
And I don't mean step ladder.
Well, I hope so. I haven't been pushed, tested, or tried to that point yet, and I hope I have the courage to maintain that.
Mm-hmm.
You do the best you can.
Sure. There is an awareness that's coming to those who are already awake, and maybe we're all the sheepdogs, or the Australian border collies, or whatever species. We could be chihuahuas in a sense. You know, they can be pretty mean too. There is another dimension to this awakening process, and I'd like you to comment on this after I finish making this statement. We have come to realize not only are people waking up, but our own escape from this somnambulistic hypnotic state that history and education and religion and these sociological programs that have been created for us, which we call existence, the law, government, nationality, entertainment, education, I may have said that, it bears repeating again, and then the subversive indoctrination programs that are there, not to mention the hidden technologies, the pharmaceuticals, the ruling currency of the oil cartel. We are grasping this whole concept and seeing how it's all interwoven, and we keep coming back to the focus of spiritual wisdom, truth, light, peace, love, joy, and our Creator, and the concept of the universe as a whole. Okay, you won't hear this on a news program on mainstream, but you have the freedom to speak your truth as to where you see all this going, and in the context that I know that you are one that is more than awake, you are awakening others to many, many truths, and I'll have you on my Evident Footprint show, by the way, very soon, so that we can go into those things. This is news, though. This fight that the Lakota tribe is having is one group's individual expression, their attempt to reclaim their sovereignty, and I'm happy to hear about that. And do you see more people waking up and asserting themselves in such a fashion?
Yeah, I think one of the things about life and the situations we find ourselves in now is the concept of the crucible. When you are put under pressure, when you are heated up, you know, in the Bible and in other sacred writings, there are the same concept of when you go through trials, when you go through pressures, when you go through things, your true nature comes out. And I think we're in a situation like that today, that various groups and various ones amongst us are recognizing that through the pressures of competing groups for power, that we're finding what our true natures are, and we are waking up as to which side we want to be on. And I think by these pressures, this crucible, I actually seek to fan the flames of whatever's heating it up, simply because it'll push people into a position of making a decision as to what side they're going to be on. Are they going to be on the side of individualness, individuality, freedom, and liberty, or are they on the side of a form of coercive collectivism and the group over the individual? I see that is throughout the history and the stories of mankind, that has always been the major battle. And some people have characterized it as the battle of good and evil, or light versus dark. It seems to me that light and truth always is willing to accept things for the way they are and work within and around and have creativity and inspiration, rather than trying to recreate or make reality bend to the will of somebody else or another group. The group mentality has always been, to some extent, one size fits all. You will submit. You will go along with what the group wants, or we will hurt and crush you. So ultimately, it is a spiritual battle. One of the things I did want to mention, though, is that I don't like to get into religious arguments much with people anymore, because if we get into whose doctrine and whose theology is more right than others, that gets us away from the bigger issue of what's light, what's dark, what's good, what's evil. When we try to get into specifics of, you know, what clothing you wear, how long your hair is, what days you set aside to chastise yourself for perceived, you know, sins or transgressions against your God, that becomes a hamster wheel. Uh-huh. It's an argument that goes nowhere, because there's no way to empirically prove anybody's theology.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'm inclined to agree with you wholeheartedly on that, and we almost, even in making that statement, we sort of impugn the hamster, you know?
Yeah, the hamster's just doing it because he doesn't know any better.
Well, but
wants some exercise.
Maybe it makes a lot of sense, because he doesn't have to wander that way, that far away from his food.
There you go.
Or his...
Well, he's also imprisoned.
Yes, yes. Well, it depends. If you leave that door open, that he can come out occasionally, then he chooses to go in there. It becomes a matter of choice.
There we go. We could start a new religion, Don. We'll call it rodent theology or hamsterism.
Oh. Well, let's not get into gerbils.
and we won't mention Richard Gere. Oops.
Oh, I have some good gerbil jokes. Maybe we can talk about them on my Evidence Footprints show. Seriously, you have to remind me about that. Well, Tim, we're about out of time. I want to thank you for coming on the show on such short notice. This is news, believe it or not, folks. It's a new way of thinking. It's at least addressing the plight of the Lakota Indians. And maybe you can help me get Russell Means on the show
We could certainly try, and it's too bad Fred wasn't able to make it. But Fred and I are in the process of trying to put together something that we're calling Freedom Fellowship, where we would hope to have meetings periodically across the country. We're working on just putting together a template that anybody can imitate, anybody can follow, and see if we can't maybe have a 1-point meeting concept that says, "Look, here we come together for this. Now go do your own thing." Very similar to the concept of the Freedom Force idea that G. Edward Griffin has established.
Yes. Well, I'll certainly make my show a pulpit for you to publicize anything that you want to accomplish on that level, as well as the TNT NewsHour. We can have you on the show again and talk about what we're going to be doing in that respect. As I mentioned to you off the air, a door closes and a wider one opens. So this might be a blessing in disguise.
And that's great. Thanks, John.
We'll see if we can't help you find a home for your show. You might consider bbsradio.com as the place to do that. And again, thank you so much for coming on. I could go on another hour, but our programming director won't permit that. So
okay. Well, thank you, Don.
and not only thanks to you, but also to Mr. Donald Newsom for making this interview possible in such an expedient but well-performed manner. And we always appreciate his participation behind the scenes and his support. Folks, you have been listening to the TNT NewsHour. I'm the host, Don Nikoloff. My special last-minute guest was Tim Wingate, and we're going to have Tim on again, and I'm going to get him on Evident Footprints. You want to listen to that show tonight, by the way. Don Harkins and Ingrid Castle of the Idaho Observer will be my special guests. Thanks again, Tim, and folks, peace, love, and light, and I'll see you tonight. Bye now. Thank you.